Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you. My name's Martin Woodward. As I said, today we're going to be talking about Team Foundation Server Express. We're going to go through and introduce Team Foundation Server, explain what it's for, how people use it, and just generally go through things. Who here has used Team Foundation Server before? Oh, okay. Who just uses version control in TFS? And who uses work item tracking, builds? Okay. The more advanced people in here, this might be a bit too basic for you. This is designed as an introduction at the beginning of the week, and then we've got some more sessions following up. There's also a session next door in 9B that's talking about Scrum with Team Foundation Server. So if you're a TFS expert, room 9B across the street there might be a better one to be in, but otherwise we're going to run through. Okay. As I said, that's my name. That's how to get hold of me. MartinWoo@Microsoft.com and Twitter, whatever. If you can get onto the internet, you could tweet me, but not right now. Once you've listened to Team Foundation this talk about TFS Express and you want to get really nerdy with Team Foundation Server, then if you want to come along to my blog, I blog about TFS, but I also am part of a podcast about Team Foundation Server, Radio TFS. If you can't get enough Team Foundation Server, then that's a place to go to. Also helps my wife sleep. One of the things we're going to be doing is today we're going to go all the way from the beginning, from installing TFS, all the way through source control, through doing some build automation, and then onto some planning of work. So first things first, I'm actually going to start installing Team Foundation Server. I'm going to do that right now because it installs pretty quick, but still, you don't need to sit and watch a green progress bar going across. So we'll kick that off, do some slides, and then we'll come back and do the rest of the talk, okay? So let's flip the screen. And here we have my shiny Windows 8 release preview. There we go. And the first thing you do is install Team Foundation Server. Now, we have a web installer now, if you wanted, which is a 1 megabyte download, slightly less than 1 megabyte. It's just complaining there's no internet access, in case anyone's wondering. So you can just run the web installer. I have, because there's no internet access that I wanted to rely on, I have the media inside here, which I downloaded. So I'm just going to double-click on that. Click install. I accept, obviously. I've read it thoroughly. Fascinating document. Blah, blah, blah. And the way Team Foundation Server works is it's a two-phase installation process, a bit like SQL and SharePoint. It copies the files onto your machine, and then you configure Team Foundation Server once the files are on there. So this is a standard Windows 8 release preview virtual machine. I could be doing this on, you know, Windows 7, Windows Vista, Windows Server. You can do this on both a client and a server machine. You don't need a server operating system to install TFS Express. So if you've got a machine under your desk somewhere, this will work just great and should install just fine on there. And it does everything you need to do, including I don't have IIS installed on here yet. Don't have SQL installed on here yet. It'll install IIS, install SQL, set them up, build all the databases, all with a few next, next, next button. You know, great, take the defaults. So let's hopefully come up. I wanted to get it onto the configuration screen quickly. So I might flip back and we'll carry on talking and then come back. I seem to have paused there. One of the things it does do, actually, is it does try to talk to the internet to download the latest Windows updates to make sure you're up to date as part of the installation. So I was worried it might hang a bit. We'll come back to this. Okay, that's me. I work on the Visual Studio team. I actually work on the Team Foundation Server team. If you want to talk to anybody on the Team Foundation Server and the Visual Studio team, we're in the purple area. Purple's our new color. Oh, I hope you like it. Shiny new logo. Shiny new color. We're over at the sort of the back of the exhibit hall as you come in. There's a big purple square above my head dangling. So just come along there and come chat. We'll be there all week. And we've got lots of people from the product group, and also we've got some excellent MVPs locally in Europe, and they will be hanging out around the area as well. Quickly jump back to the demo, and we'll see. We're in a wizard for installing Team Foundation Server Express. We're going to start the wizard to install it. And we're going to say, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, next. Then it runs a bunch of checks to make sure your system's ready to install TFS. Yeah, okay, this is going to be okay. And it's going to warn me that it's going to install IIS for me as part of its installation. So I hit configure, and off it goes, and it's going to install, configure IIS, install SQL Express, configure the database, and do all the stuff it needs to do. And it just magic. And again, we don't need to watch that. It takes about 5 minutes. So hopefully, 5 minutes' time, we'll be ready to go. Anyone here had to install TFS, like, before 2010, maybe? Or, yeah, apologies. It's a lot better now. Shiny. It's even got green. It's even graphical. No command line anymore. Used to have to read a big help file, and it was very easy to get wrong. Anyway, so I work on the Visual Studio team. I co-authored a couple of books. Obviously, that's a blatant plug. Not that makes me an expert on TFS. It just means I know some really good people. I recommend those. We actually just got the 2012 books are available for pre-order. They're not available to buy right now because the product hasn't shipped and we haven't finished writing the books, but you can certainly pre-order them. I live locally, fairly. I live in just near Belfast in Northern Ireland. My commute to get here yesterday, it took me just over 2 hours door-to-door, an hour-long flight. I know people in the Netherlands who had a longer commute than me to get here, so it's very local. However, that's where I live. I live in the middle of a field in Northern Ireland. It rains all the time in Northern Ireland, more than in the Netherlands. So that's the view from my window, quite often a rainbow because it's always raining. I do have a desk in Northern Ireland, but I don't tend to go there very much because that's where my desk is. You know, it's a bit of a wasteland. In fact, it's just there in the corner of that building. That there is an old World War I battleship. Anyone seen the Game of Thrones on HBO? That's where they film Game of Thrones there. And this is where, you know, this is Harland and Wolff shipyard. That hole here, don't let this worry you. That was where they built the Titanic. So quite close to where I'm building TFS. Don't worry. It was fine the last time we touched it, okay? Yeah, exactly. So anyway, moving on. I tend to work from home more often, just so I don't jinx things. And the rest of my team, actually the majority of my team, work in a place called North Carolina on the east of the United States. The other half of my team work in Redmond. Our Team Foundation server used to live here in Building 40 in Redmond, just behind the canteen. If anyone's visiting while I'm there, feel free, we'll go out for lunch and I'll show you the server. It supports all 3,500 people that are working on Visual Studio right now to try and get it ready for release. So it's a big server, you know. I say where my server used to be, I'm actually working on my server currently is tfspreview.com, which is our cloud-hosted TFS server. When the internet's back up, if anyone wants to go to tfspreview.com, you can get a free account there to play with Team Foundation Server. And I'm actually doing a session on Thursday all about cloud-hosted TFS, but we'll cover it a bit later on. So my server is now, you know, in the cloud. So that's good, which means basically in a data center, in a car park shipping container just outside Chicago, probably, is where the cloud is. Or above my house in Ireland, because it rains all the time. Okay, that's where everything is. So, of the people that are not using TFS today, what are some reasons why you're not using Team Foundation Server? Some common ones I hear. People think it might be too expensive, hard to use. Just for big teams at Microsoft with 3,500 people, I've got 6 people on my team. How does that apply to me? Or I've got 2 people. Or maybe it's a bit difficult to use. Maybe we had a go on Team Foundation Server 2005 and thought, woof, that was a bit clever, you know, and yeah, maybe thought it a bit difficult. These are some myths I hear about TFS. My mission today is to try and bust these myths, to try and break these myths. And we'll go through and we'll take them one by one and decide if they're true still or not, and hopefully I'll convince you they are not. Not that they were ever true, of course, but they're definitely not now. So the first one we'll look at is too expensive. As a matter of interest, who here has an MSDN subscription? Raise your hands. Okay. You already own Team Foundation Server. So that was easy. So who doesn't have MSDN? Okay, we're going to get to you in a second. So Team Foundation Server is already included in MSDN, any of these versions, with, you know, Visual Studio, basically. It already includes a license to the server of Team Foundation Server. And anyone else who has MSDN can connect to that Team Foundation Server instance. So you already own it. So it's not too expensive. If you didn't already own it and you wanted to buy it off the shelf from, you know, Amazon or wherever, you can buy it for $499 US dollars. I should have looked it up in euros, but I forgot to. It's around about that in euro. Any idea what it is in euros retail? It's around about that, yeah. So, yeah, around about sort of price. Nobody pays retail anyway, because everyone's got, you know, agreements with Microsoft. And if you buy the retail version of Team Foundation Server, 5 users can connect without what's called a client access license, CAL. So we license it per user, is how we license TFS. 5 people can connect before you need to buy a client access license, and then you buy them, and they cost the same again, $4.99 to add a user. As soon as you buy more than 5 CALs, come talk to Microsoft, because there's bulk discounts as soon as you get over 5 of anything from Microsoft. I think that's about right. However, we weren't happy with that. We thought we could do better. So in April 2012, we announced some changes to the existing TFS 2010, the product that's in market today. Team Explorer Everywhere, which is the Eclipse integration with TFS and the cross-platform command line integration, that's now free. If you can talk to TFS, you can use the Eclipse and the cross-platform tooling for free. Don't have to pay any more for that. If you want to look at the reports that Team Foundation Server generates, TFS has all this data about check-ins and work and builds, and it creates a data warehouse of this data, and it has some reports that look at this data. If you wanted to look at those reports, then you don't need a CAL anymore to be able to view those reports. Previously you did. And then finally, we recently announced the System Center integration, System Center Operations Manager integration with Team Foundation Server. Again, that doesn't require a TFS client access license for all your System Center users that are hooking into TFS. So we basically took away a lot of places that were sticking points, people thinking TFS was too expensive, and we just got rid of them. Great. However, we can do better than that. I feel like a salesman. I'm really, really not. Team Foundation Server Express, we just announced, which is hopefully why you're here. And that is a free version of Team Foundation Server. To all you people who don't have MSDN subscriptions, you can still install Team Foundation Server Express. It's great for just, you know, designed for small teams working on source control, builds, work item tracking, test case management, all the stuff TFS does. It's designed for small teams. And not only is it supported by, obviously, Visual Studio 2012, it's also supported by the Express editions of Visual Studio 2012. So you can connect from a free version of Visual Studio to a free version of Team Foundation Server and not have to pay Microsoft any money at all. I told you I'm not a salesperson. So, yeah. Not only that, if you do have Visual Studio 2010, Visual Studio 2008, heck, VB6, you can connect it to Team Foundation Server 2012 Express and happily work away and use Express for your team. Now, there are some limitations with the Express version, as you would expect. It only supports SQL Express. It doesn't run against a regular SQL database, so, which is fine, because you don't have to pay for a license for SQL Express. But, you know, there's limitations in SQL Express in terms of database sizes and things like that. It only supports a single server configuration. Don't worry about that. if you've got a small team, that's perfectly fine, up to a couple of hundred users on your team. But once you go into really, really large teams like we have in Microsoft, then you need fancy multi-tier configurations of TFS. You can't do that with Express. You need to pay for TFS standard then. And it doesn't integrate with SharePoint or reporting services. And then finally, of course, you can upgrade from TFS Express to a full version of TFS. And you just basically uninstall TFS Express, install the full version, for which you have a key now, and it just all works, all your history comes over, everything's great. Okay, hopefully, that's that one busted. Everyone agreed? It's definitely not too expensive anymore. Yep. Okay. Next one. It's hard to install and administer. Okay. Well, we've already seen we have wizards now. Oh, no, before we can do that, we have wizards now. Team Foundation Server, traditionally, was this multi-tier server product, needed to be on a Windows server, needed SQL Server, had integrations with SharePoint, with reporting services, with Project Server, with SCOM, you know, lots of things. Great for portfolio management, great for really large teams. However, for smaller teams, that was a lot of overhead to have to install just to be able to use TFS for source control. So we changed that in TFS 2010, and we introduced a basic configuration of TFS that now supported on a laptop, now supported against basic versions of SQL. Great, it's a standard source control. We've simplified things in TFS 2012, and then it's ideal for small projects and small teams. Okay. TFS Express is basically a basic install of TFS. So there's no dependencies. It's a simple basic install of Team Foundation Server with some additional limitations. So let's go play with TFS. Now it's all installed. It installed ages ago, by the way. But here we go. Green. Ta-da. So that's it installed. And then I'm going to come in here and I hit next. And actually, the next thing I'm going to do is we're going to do some build automation stuff later. So we're going to have a build server. I need a build server. So let's go build. Let's go start install a build server quickly while we're in the wizard. So next. La 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 la, next, 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 next. You know, I don't read any of these things. Configure, because I can't press next anymore. La 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 la. Hopefully not too fast, because, yep, there we go. Da 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 da. All good. Next. Close. Great. All done. Well, that wasn't hard. Okay. Look at this. We've got a GUI for administrating TFS. No more command line tools, no more blah, blah, blah. We actually have a user interface now for coming in here and setting your email. You say if you want to configure it, I don't have internet right now, but if I could, I would connect it to my internet, my SMTP server, my Exchange server, so I could send email from TFS and things. So we have a whole user interface around configuring and managing TFS now. Very simple, very easy to use. Now, I mentioned you can talk to Team Foundation Server from TFS Express. So the first thing you do when you install Team Foundation Server is you need a project to work in, a team project. Now, for a small team, you probably only want one team project at a rough guess, you know? You can have multiple solution files per team project. So let's just go in and we'll create a new team project for us to use today. So this is Visual Studio Express for web developers. I'm going to go to the team menu, connect to Team Foundation Server. It's going to say which server do you want to connect to? Now it's the one running locally, so it was already there. Otherwise I would have had to add it in. Hit connect. And we see now we have this page on the right-hand side called Team Explorer. I want to create a new team project, so I click there. I'm going to give it a name, Contoso, hit next, next. I'm going to use the Scrum process template. A process template controls how TFS works, which work items you have, you know, like product backlog items or stories or requirements, those sorts of things. The default is Scrum, and I would recommend that one as a good starting point, but you can play with TFS Preview. Create a few different types of team project and decide which one's right for you if you wanted. Okay, so we'll hit next and next. Again, lots of next pressing and then finish. I could have just hit finish there, actually. So that's going to go and it's going to download the process template, talk to my Team Foundation server, which is all running on my laptop here. And this is a regular, you know, this is the regular laptop they give to developers at Microsoft. This isn't the fancy ones you see in the keynote with SSDs and everything. This is what it really feels like to go create a team project for the first time. It's going to go create the work item types and do all the things it needs to do. Hopefully it won't take too much longer. Blah, 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 blah. So the process template not only controls the work item types, it also controls how you want version control to work, how you want test management to work, and those sorts of things, and how you want builds to work as well. So we set all those things up for us. We hit close. And then now we're connected to the Contoso team project in TFS. So we're all ready to go. And you can share that with your team. You can go to, if we click here on web access, that'll bring up the brand new web front end to Team Foundation server that was completely rewritten for TFS 2012. Takes a little while first time in because this is the first time we've installed TFS, so it's compiling things. There we go. That's what the web access looks like. I mentioned we have an administration tool for server administration, but what about all the administration you want to do, like managing security and setting up email alerts so you can find out when a build is broke, those sorts of things, or when somebody checks a file in? You can actually go here to the little admin icon, and that'll bring up the security pages, and we can come in here and it'll warn us that we don't have an email server set up yet, but we could come in and we could just create a new alert and we could say, hey, anytime a build fails, okay, then email the person who broke the build and tell them you need to stay work and finish it until your build's working again. So you know, that's how easy it is to do that now. Again, that used to be a lot harder. That's now very, very simple. So there we go, and this is basic work item web access. We're going to cover this a bit more in a second. Great. So, yeah, that's basically installing, getting started with TFS. Pretty easy. Not much to it. So, hard to install and administer? Will you give me that one? Not hard? Okay. Busted. We'll say yes. Everyone on the recording, they were nodding away enthusiastically. There we go. And also, I've proven to you that it's not just for large organizations. You know, I can install this on my laptop. I can install this on a box under my desk. I can run this with a team of five or less people. It's not just for large organizations. It's very simple. So let's go look at difficult to use. And we're just going to go play with Team Foundation Server for most of the rest of this session now, if that's OK. And just have a play and see what all the different features are. So that's getting started with version control first. Okay. So we're back in here. I'm going to fire up Visual Studio 2012 because I'm going to use a simple Hello World project that I've got. Let me just minimize this window here. There we go. I'm just going to open Hello World. And this is, I used to be a consultant, so it's a very simple Hello World. Because I live in Europe, I like to remind the rest of my team that I do. So if we go into the message factory, we'll have a bunch of different language versions here. Here we go. Hallo Veled. There we are. That's my impression of Dutch. And a few of us. So hopefully you see your local language, including Welsh. Any Welsh people? Oh, never mind. I'm half Welsh, so there we go. So we've just got a simple application here. How do we add this to source control? Well, we right-click on the solution, add to source control. Easy. Let's tell it which Team Foundation server we want to connect to. Now, I'm doing this, again, brand new, from a different version of Visual Studio, which is why it's asking me for the server. Whereabouts in version control would you like to share your project? Top tip for everybody, when you normally see a demo, if you just click on OK and off they go, always, if you can, just create a folder called main and check it into there. We'll cover that why later, because we're going to cover branching and things in a moment. Just create a folder called main. It'll be easier for you. And trust me for now, okay? So, Contoso main hello world. Great. Let's check it in there. So, and then we go to pending changes. Team Foundation server uses a two-phase commit. Sounds complicated, but basically, who uses SourceSafe today? Just quick raise your hand. Who uses, say, Subversion? And then, I don't know, Git? Or Perforce, something like that? Okay, right. So, CVS, anyone? Okay, cool, good. So, SourceSafe, the way SourceSafe works is it uses a version control model where when you're checking in files, it actually checks them in one by one. That can be a nightmare if something breaks halfway through, because now you've checked in 50% of the files you were editing and the build's broke. It doesn't work. TFS doesn't do that. It checks everything in a single transaction. If your code, if these changes cannot be checked in one go, then none of the code gets checked in. It tells you what the error is, it allows you to fix it, allows you to move on, and then you can check in a single transaction. It also builds a list up of the files that you're changing, and it builds them up here and keeps them very, very close to you so you can easily see what changes I'm making. It's a lot better than that view search by Martin blah, 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 and then you forget to switch search off when you're trying to figure out, hey, which files have I changed in SourceSafe? It's a lot easier than that nowadays. So we're just going to come here and we'll say initial version. We're going to give it a comment. It's a good practice to give a short comment about why you're making the changes in source control. Not what. If they want to know what you're changing, they can just look at history. It's what source control's for. But it's good to leave a little comment as to why you're making some changes. So here we go. Initial version, hit check in. Now, we are Microsoft, so we like to ask annoying questions like, are you sure? I'm going to say don't prompt again and say yes. There we go. So it's checked in those files for me. And so there, I've got them in, and they're now shared on the server. If I go back to Source Control Explorer, I can look at my server, and I can see there's that folder called main, and inside that is my Hello World solution file. So that's now shared on the server for the rest of the team to use. Okay, that's easy. Now then, what should we do next? Well, let me open up Solution Explorer. And we're just going to open program.cs. And then I'm just going to go back here and go back to pending changes because I want to show you something. So you're in here in program files. Now, what do you need to do? In SourceSafe, you need to go right-click, check out, blah, blah, blah. You might need to go using a different external tool outside of Visual Studio if you're in a different source control tool. In TFS, if you want to do something, you just start typing. Hello. There you go. And the file, it's noticed the file is already checked, you know, is all edited. It's ready to edit for me. Well, that's fine. What happens if I want to, let's just check in that change. In fact, and we'll check it in without a comment. I told you it's good practice, but we'll do bad practice just to show you. Right then. That's great. All very well and good. What happens if I'm not using Visual Studio? You know, why on earth? Well, maybe you're not using Visual Studio, just so happens. Maybe you like to use Notepad to edit files occasionally, like a web config or something like that. A quick little shortcut for you. So back in Solution Explorer, you can now right-click on anywhere in the solution, and look at this, open folder in Windows Explorer. Woohoo! At last, finally. There we are. So we can come in here. I'm now in Windows Explorer. Maybe I want to edit program.cs in Notepad. So let's open that up. Here we go in Notepad. And I'm going to drag this over here. Snap. There. Visual Studio. Let's close that down. There we go. So I want to just quickly show you something. Hang on a second. So I've got pending changes view open there. Here I am in Notepad. And I'm going to say, hello, Amsterdam. Hit save. I'm going to hit save now. So I'll press it on the toolbar button. Save. Look at that. Visual Studio already knows I've got it checked, already knows I've edited it. I didn't have to check the file out beforehand. It's just there. If I take the word Amsterdam out and hit save again, look at that. It now knows I haven't changed it and it's not checked out anymore. This is a new model of version control in Team Foundation Server 2012 called a local workspace. A local workspace stores all the state about your changes, about the files you have edited, which files map to which folders on disk. It stores all that data locally so that it doesn't need to talk to Team Foundation Server to know which files you've changed. It also allows you to be able to, so you can check, you can edit while offline is another great example. You can compare and tell what's different between my local, you know, the version I'm editing now and the version I last checked out from the server without having to go to the server, so it makes it a lot easier. You can undo the changes you've done just without having to touch the server, all offline. So that's great. That's a local workspace. Another thing you can have is, if I go back into the that folder again, actually, let's show you a different way. Yes, I do want to open it in the editor. If I go back into that folder and I was to add a new file, like, say, call it testdata.txt. So I'm going to just add a file into my folder. Again, that's something that you quite often do inside of, you know, maybe add a PNG or something like that, or a GIF inside of a website. Well, look over here now. It's got detected changes, one. You press that, it actually says, hey, I noticed you've added testdata.txt outside of Visual Studio. Would you like to add it into this project? Would you like to check it in? So I can say promote. Maybe I didn't want to add testdata.txt in because it was automatically generated, some test data as part of my build process. If I wanted to, I could ignore it. So it never, ever got checked in. But I'm actually here. I'm going to say, yeah, promote. Here we go. Good job. Hit check in. Great. Off we go. Question, sir? So the question was, does this work when Visual Studio is not running? The answer is yes, it does. It, as soon as you start Visual Studio again, it does a scan of your local workspace to see what's different between then and the last version you checked in. If you're running, we have what's called the shell extensions, which are a Windows Explorer plugin. So you can install this as a power tool, and then you can actually do source control without ever having to fire up Visual Studio. You can just right-click and say check in inside of Windows Explorer. We also have an Eclipse plugin that I work on. And again, that works fine. You don't need Visual Studio installed or anything like that. Okay, great question. Thank you. Right, so that's basic version control. And then if we go in here, we can come on down. Obviously, now we've been playing with that file, we can just... I want to see the changes to this file. I can right-click here, source control, view history. There we go. There are the changes I've made to my file. What about maybe I want to see... maybe I didn't like that change I did in change set 5. I want to roll it back. Previously, you needed to know some bizarre command line syntax, blah, blah, blah. Now you just right-click on here, roll back change set. Ta-da! It's got the rollback. Let's open it up. We can actually now right-click on this, and we can say, hey, well, what's different between... Actually, can't tell. What's different between this version and the previous version? So we'll go to source control, compare with the latest version, and we'll see... yep, there's actually no differences. What did we do there? There we are. That's exciting. While we're in the diff view, we can actually make some changes as well. We can actually tell exactly what's changing as we go along. This is a new diff tool, and it's all built inside of Visual Studio. So if I come here, I can still type, and I get all my IntelliSense and everything, you know. So I can still do whatever I want to do, all my auto-completes. That's all there. That's all from inside the compare view. All built in. Shiny. And we've also got a bunch of, you know, if you have a compare tool you prefer to use that isn't Visual Studio, then you can use that one. You can just configure external diff and merge tools if you want. So that we have a change I've done. Let's actually check that in. And we've showed you compare. Let's come on in. Oh, okay, there we go. Interesting, there we are. Right, and let's see what I've just done. Source control. Let's come into Solution Explorer. In fact, let's go to Source Control Explorer. We'll just do a quick get latest. I was talking then and wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. There we are. There we go. We're not completed. Okay, that's exciting. Just had a little glitch with the internet being down there. There we are, resolve conflicts. Okay, go back to here. Yeah, sorry about that. So it's done the rollback. I noticed it hadn't changed files, which is I was a bit confused, so I should have, my attention should have been raised at that point in time, but let's do what we're doing again. So we do view history. Okay, yep, let's do a compare with that version. Oh look, yep, the comment block's gone. Right, let's do this thing again that we were doing, CW, blah, 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 blah. Hello world, yep, sorry about that. Didn't explain that very well, there we go. Okay, so that's what I'm happy with. So that's the version that I'm gonna check in. Yep, that looks all good. Right, hit check in. There we go. Okay, great. Notice there, because I've been doing something, I've been messing around quickly, there was a problem with it. It didn't let me check in. If I'd had 10 files, it wouldn't have let me checked in any of them until I'd resolved whatever I'd done silly with my workspace, you know. So the next thing I want to do is show you shelving. Who here has heard of a feature called shelving in TFS? Okay, great. Shelving, just then quickly, for the half of the audience that don't know, shelving is a way of taking a change and storing it on the server and keeping a copy on the server, but it's not checked in. It's just stored on the server as a backup. It's great for sharing code with your colleagues. It's great for taking a backup of some code. So say I was coming in here, and maybe I'm translating this to, I don't know, French or something like that. Bonjour tout le monde. There we go. It's kind of French. And then I can shelve that, and I can say, you know, work in progress. Hit shelve, and that stores a copy of that code on the server. Maybe I'm in the middle of translating this into French, and my boss comes to me and says, hey, Martin, I know you're localizing your Hello World application into French, very important, but I need you to go work on this actually important thing over here for me and fix a bug. I can uncheck that box there, preserve pending changes, hit shelve, and that's going to now, because I've already got one, yep, that's going to now take my changes, store them on the server, and roll back to the last version that I was playing with. Great. So I'm going to edit away here. Maybe my boss wanted, it was extremely important to him that we had a fancy comment block here, you know, I don't know, whatever we're going to do. So let's come in, oops, sorry, and we'll add some extremely intelligent comments in here. Okay. And then I'm just working on this. You know, while I'm working on this, I want to get that work I had, the Hello World in French, I want to pull down that work and include it with my check-in, maybe. Previously, if you want to do that, again, was hard work, involved lots of stuff. I can now just go to Actions, find shelf sets. There's the one I was working on that belongs to me. Hit Unshelve. Now watch down here where it says Console. Hit Unshelve. And magically, it's merged my shelf set with my current work in progress. Just does it. What, might you ask? What happens if, rather than saying hello world here, maybe I were doing this in German. Hallo Welt, I'm guessing, something like that. Yeah? What if I was editing that line there? What would happen then? Well, if I hit unshelve, it detects we have a conflict between the version we have, and so it cannot auto-merge the code for you. And so it allows you to figure out what you would like to do to merge these changes. And again, we've improved not just the auto-merge features in TFS 2012, so that it more often merges things correctly for you. But when it cannot merge for you, it'll give you a new, better conflict tool to help you resolve your conflicts. And then if we go here to merge changes in merge tool, I'll say yes. It's going to open my program CS in the new, brand new merge experience in Visual Studio 2012. So from here, again, in my editor, I can say, you know what? I quite like that version. So it's going to put that version down here in my code. But I actually want it to be hello Welt slash bonjour tout le monde. There we go. Because I want to combine the changes, you know. So you can decide how you want to do it. And again, this is a full Visual Studio editor, so you have access to all of the, you know, all of your IntelliTrace and IntelliSense and blah, blah, blah. It just all works. Great. So I'll do that. Super. So I'll accept that as the merge, and all the conflicts have gone. Notice At no point have we ever blocked you from doing other things in Visual Studio. You can go off and come back to conflicts. You can go off. When I was talking to the server, nowhere did we block you in your interactions with Visual Studio. So if you want to just ignore an error message for now and keep on working and come back to it and figure out what it means in a minute, you can do that now. Previously, we used to pop up a lot of dialogues in your face, which was really annoying. Question, sir? So the question was, is it possible to open a shell set from a different branch and merge it back into main, for example? Okay, so the question was, what about opening a shell set from, say, main into a branch which was, say, release? No, you can't do that right now, but we'll talk about a bit about branching and merging for the audience and explain a bit more about that right now, though, because that's a great question. Not from the UI, I don't think. Matt, can you? No? You can't unshelve from a branch, can you? Unshelve into a different branch, no. Yep, you cannot. Right then. Speaking of branches, let's right-click on here. So, who uses branches today, ever? Don't be... Wow. I worked for, like, I don't know, 18 years in software development, and I used branching 3 times in those 18 years until I came to Microsoft. So, a perfectly valid branching strategy is to have one branch and stay in it. In fact, that's one of the most successful branching strategies there are. So don't feel like you have to have lots of branches. Branches are like puppies. You have to take care of them, okay? A branch is an area in version control that you are using to develop on your source code in parallel. So you're over here, I want to work on, say, my V1 release. Over here, at the same time, I might want to be working in version 2. If you're working in 2 places, you're always going to have problems trying to get that code back together again. Always. We can provide you a bunch of tooling which we've improved hugely in TFS 2010 for playing with branches and merges, but you're still going to have problems. You're still going to have to make sure code moves between the other, you know, between the 2 branches and things. So don't use branching lightly, but branching's great when you need it. Okay. So we're going to turn our folder called main, and this is why we did it. We're going to convert it into a branch. Now, if you didn't have a folder called main, but you checked in hello world at the root, now would be a good time to move it into a folder called main and then convert that into a branch. And I'll take you in the book, and again, sorry for plugging the book, but there's a branching chapter in the book there that's in the bookstore, and it takes you through how to do all that if you want to. But we'll just quickly create a branch. So there we go. It's now, notice, got a little icon against it to say I'm a shiny branch. And I'm going to create a new branch of my branch called, let's call it releases. And we're going to say this is the code that we have in QA. Okay, we'll hook branch. Now, people might say, you know, we've heard of like lightweight branching models, blah, blah, blah. TFS is very, very lightweight branching. We just hit yes. Continue to branch, yes. There you go. It's branched. It's done. There's no hassles. You can just branch a branch just like that. It does it in a single transaction. It doesn't take any more room on the server when you do the branch. It just actually stores it as links over on the server. It's very easy. So let's create another one for you. Again, this isn't a great example because it's Hello World, but believe me, branching this on the millions of files inside of Visual Studio isn't that much slower than doing a branch here. You know, it's a fast operation. So we'll do right click there, we'll say branch, and we'll say releases/prod. Okay, so we've got our 2 branches and we've got our main branch. We've got 3 branches in total. How do all these, and we see them, there they are. So Team Foundation Server uses what's called a path space branching model. So it stores them elsewhere in the path. So we'll right-click on the main, and we can right-click on there, and we can say branching and merging view hierarchy. And look, that's what our branching hierarchy looks like. We get a shiny picture. Oh, yeah, brilliant. If you make a change in main, you can actually see. So if I come down into here, Let's go back into Hello World, and we'll check in this change we were working on to program.cs. Right click, source control, check in. We'll just check that in. Merge some stuff. There we go. Hit check in there. Great. So that's there. And then, how do I know if that change has made it into the other branches or not? I can view history on here. Did this change? Where is that? I can go to track change set. I want to say I want it in main and all the child branches, please. Hit visualize. And we can see it's made it into main, but it hasn't made it into production yet. So I can drag, drop, and that'll do a merge for me into production. I can hit next. Change to 11, hit finish, okay, that's because I was going to do some stuff. What I wanted to show you, though, as well as merging from here, let me just quickly show you branching and merging view hierarchy. What I wanted to show you, sorry. Not only can you do now a merge, a standard merge, where you merge from a parent to a child or a child to a parent, that's obviously supported. What you can do is merge into a completely different area. So I could merge from, say, releases slash prod straight to releases slash QA, and it warns me that there's no relationship directly between production and QA. Not that you would ever make any changes in production without first checking them into main and QA, but say if you did, and you wanted to quickly get them back into the QA without going up through main and down again, then you can now do what's called a baseless merge directly in the UI. You don't need to go to any command line tools or anything like that. It just works. And you hit next and it all works. Great. Okay. And then finally, I wanted to show you, it's not just for your Visual Studio developers. You can also come in here. Let's just close some of this stuff. Let's fire up Eclipse. Again. You know, you come to tech ed, you didn't expect to be firing up Eclipse, probably. But I'll just quickly show you. You can right-click on here. It's just as easy for your Java developers and your Android developers or whatever, or your Xcode developers, whatever you want, to right-click, share project, team foundation server, blah, 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 hit there, yep, Contoso, next. Remember, I want it in that main folder that we created earlier, but I want it called billing service, hit next, hit finish. Just going to quickly show you, because it's the same experience, it's just in Eclipse, look. It just works. If I go to pending changes, it's got colour, because it's Eclipse rather than Visual Studio. And I come in here, I can hit check in. It's just the same thing. We even ask the same annoying messages. Look at that, brilliant. Yep. One thing we have actually done, which is quite neat, is if I go here, make that a bit smaller. So there's pending changes view in Visual Studio. There's pending changes view in Eclipse. If I go in here and I actually make a change, so I'm going to edit program.cs and hit Control S, we can see, look at that. I didn't have to press refresh in Eclipse. It automatically knew about changes I'm doing in Visual Studio, all the shell extensions and vice versa. There's no need to press refresh. We've actually enabled inter-process communication between Eclipse running in Java on your PC with Visual Studio running under .NET. It all just works. It just works now. So there we go. Great. Right. Where are we at? Getting started with version control. Okay. These are all the improvements. Hopefully I showed you a bunch of these. I didn't show you execute bit support. That's something for the Unix guys will really like. Basically, you don't have to, if you have a Unix file system, there are things called execute bits, which says if you can execute a shell script or not. That just magically works now. It just detects the fact that execute bit is on there and sets it. And we actually had to do a lot of work on the server to enable these Unix guys to transparently work. So the gentleman over here will like that request because he works for companies that were asking for it, but everybody else is like, oh, what's execute bit? Whatever. Okay. Moving to Team Foundation Server, when you're moving to TFS for source control, you can just do a get latest and check in, obviously. That's the easiest way to move to any new version control tool. You just drag and drop. It helps you rethink how you do version control, because most version control systems are different. every version control system is actually a little bit different. People don't like that fact, because people who've used one version control tool think that all version control tools should work like the way that they're used to, but every single version control tool is different. So gives you the opportunity to rethink how you do version control based on the new way of tooling. You know, don't really want pinning and sharing anymore, but maybe branching is quite good. Maybe I want to change how I organize my code because I've got branches now, that sort of thing. However, you might want to migrate source code from, say, Subversion or from a different tool. There are third-party migration toolings available for, say, Subversion we mentioned and the other ones. And there's what's called the Migration Toolkit, Integration Toolkit, which is an open source COPREX project which people in my team contribute to. And it helps you do migrations between system X and system Y. However, we own SourceSafe, we own CFS. There's nothing stopping us from linking those two together really well. Okay? So we can do a really good experience with the SourceSafe migration, you'll be glad to know. And it allows you to upgrade your SourceSafe database into TFS and keep all the history. Yay. Which is probably what you want from SourceSafe. Who did this in the old days with TFS 2010? One person? Basically, what you have to do is create a couple of XML files, jiggle them around, run a command line, and boom, about an hour later or 3 days later, it's imported into TFS. How it works is, it actually does it goes through SourceSafe and analyzes every single check-in you've made into SourceSafe, and then it starts from the year zero and makes those changes in TFS. But TFS is really strict about auditing. It doesn't just let you randomly replace a date of any date in, whereas SourceSafe was a nightmare. If you're in two different time zones, then that was the date that showed up in history, you know? So what Team Foundation Server does is it actually records the date at which the import is being done as the date in history at which the check-in occurs, but it adds into the comment, originally checked in by Martin on the 4th of September 2007 or something like that. That's how it works. Now, we could improve that because we own SourceSafe. SourceSafe's coming out of support. We own TFS. We can definitely improve this scenario. So we did. I'm not going to show it now because it wasn't in the release candidate bits, but around about RTM time, we're shipping the SourceSafe wizard. So you're the first people to see what these screens look like outside of Microsoft. So let's have a look at them. Basically, it's yet another next wizard, okay? So you come in, you tell it where your SourceSafe database is. You do not need SourceSafe installed on the machine you're doing this from, first, which is a good thing, because you're trying to find that SourceSafe after a long time. Sometimes can be quite tricky. You don't need SourceSafe installed. It'll just work. You point it to your database. You say, these are the things I would like to import. You tell it where you would like to import. Notice I'm actually here importing them into my tfspreview.com account. So I can not only import into my on-premise TFS, but I can import into the cloud. I tell it where I'd like to import, and I tell it to bring the full history over for me, please. We're trying to get rid of this before we ship it. This was like it stores the state in a local SQL database, so that if it crashes and you have to resume, then it doesn't have to start from the beginning and things like that. So anyway, that dialog box should go. It then processes SourceSafe database and it upgrades it into Team Foundation Server. It can take a long time if you have two decades of history in SourceSafe to do all those check-ins into Team Foundation Server. There's no getting around that, but it can take a while, but it runs, and at least you have a nice GUI that runs and gives you a little progress bar. And then finally, once it's upgraded, it does, gives you a log, warns you for any problems, and off you go. So you can import portions of your tree, and bring it across, and it's just a nice little wizard, and it just works. It's shipping around the RTM time frame. No more command lines, yay. And, important, in the old tool, you used to have to say, hey, this user in SourceSafe now maps to this user over here in TFS, and that user still has to exist in TFS, or a username has to exist for them in TFS. Oh, I don't know about you, but most of my developers who were working on the code 20 years ago, not all of them are still in the team. Never mind. So we changed it. We did change the server, and we allowed you to be able to check in and say, I'm checking this in on behalf of this user. And that user just be a string, and that's the name of the SourceSafe user, and that's what shows up in history. So in history, you just say, checked in by, you know, John Smith, who happened to have left the company 4 years ago or whatever and no longer works here anymore. That's fine. In history, it still shows up as John Smith did the check-in. No need to go. SourceSafe installed, and it works on-premise and on-cloud. Let's talk about builds. After source control, build automation is the most important thing you can do to improve code quality in your organization. Just knowing that your build compiles is such a huge step forwards to stop people checking in code that breaks, and then building on from that, having unit tests and all that sort of stuff. Just having it work and having a simple, repeatable build. It helps improve how you work. It's continuous integration is, you know, Martin Fowler's paper on this, if you want to read more about it. But our server we have set up allows you to build on every single check-in, which we call continuous integration. It also allows you to do what's called a gated check-in. So we mentioned shelving. A gated check-in takes, when you go to check-in, it takes your code and it says, hey, this is protected by a build definition, this area of code, and it takes your changes, it shelves them, puts them onto the server, it then goes over to the build server, takes the latest version of the code, merges it with your shelf set, which you can now do very efficiently because we've enabled auto-merge, works really well, and only if the build succeeds does it then check in code on your behalf. So that way, code never, ever, ever gets into the main line of code base that doesn't compile, at least. Okay? So that's great. Now, bear in mind, it does introduce some friction because, you know, they have to actually go, it has to go through a validation step before the code appears checked in. So don't overuse gated check-in, but it's a great tool, especially when you've got a larger team. Like, we're in a 300-person team in TFS. And, you know, maybe a great developer only breaks the build once a year. With 300 people, the build's broke, you know, two times a day if everyone breaks the build once a year. So gated check-ins are really, really useful with large builds, but they're useful in other times as well. And then finally, we have what's called a rolling build trigger, which is very similar to how, say, Cruise Control or Hudson or Jenkins or something like that does a build where it waits 10 minutes and then amalgamates all those check-ins and does a build of those. Personally, I like build on every check-in, as it means I can tell exactly who broke a build, because the second that they check in, it kicks a build off. If somebody else checks in while that's building, it'll just queue up the build, and then it'll build it, and then I know exactly who broke the build, which change broke the build. Run the test easy, so does it compile, does it pass unit tests, does it do all the things that you want it to do, does it pass code analysis, whatever you want to code it to do. And then you can easily customize these. So let's show you that. So here I have my Hello World project that we were just working on. I'll leave that change checked out there, and we'll use that to trigger our build. So I'll go and do it from Visual Studio. Not only can you create .NET builds, you can also obviously create builds for Java projects and Maven, things like that as well. But you know, we're here at TechEd, let's focus on .NET. So we'll go to builds, new build definition. Blah, 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 hello world. I'm going to make it a continuous integration build. So that's your build. That's defining your build. This is when you want to do a build. This is what you would like to build. I don't really want to build my Java stuff right now. I'm just going to build my .NET code. Okay. And then where would you like to build it? And where would you like the results to be? I want them on TFS 2012. This is a network share that you would like the builds to go to. Hello world. Hopefully that'll work. Did that? Yep. Okay. Sorry. Slash hello world. There we go. And then your process template. This is how you can customize your build. So currently I have it telling it to build that solution file. I have it telling it to do those unit tests. I have it doing the builds with this definition name, which is basically a day-day, month-month, year-year revision number. Maybe I don't want that. Maybe I want to customize my build so that it gives me a different build label. Maybe I want it to be something like, I know, 1.0.0.1234, and a number that increments. There we go. So that's how I want my builds to be labeled. Great. So I've customized my build definition already, haven't even started. And then retention policy is how you want to, when you have builds running on every single check-in, those builds mount up. And builds contain a lot of data often, so we can automatically delete old builds for you if you wish. So there we go. Right, that looks good. Hit save. And then let's right-click on here, and we'll queue a new build up just to make sure we did it right. And that's going to run the build, hopefully. Again, it's all running on my local machine, including source control, so it might not be the fastest. But we'll double-click on it, and we'll watch the build running. We've improved the build report dramatically, not just in Visual Studio here, but we've also improved the build report over in Web Access. So if I go to build and look on the web, I can go see the web version of my build report very quickly as well, when the machine's not busy doing a build, obviously. There we go. Let's look at our queued builds. There it is running. I can double-click on that, and it shows me the build report in the web as well, which is pretty nice and shiny. We can obviously as well see the build report in Eclipse. So we'll assume that's going to work, and we'll come back into Visual Studio. We'll do a check-in, and we'll say making a change. We could associate that with the work item, but we haven't really talked about work items yet, so let's just hit check-in. And then if we go back to the build server as soon as it's finished doing a check-in, yep, it's checked in. If we go and look at our builds now for Hello World, we can see that it's queued up the second build for us, you know. So it's running, it's working on the first build that it was already working on. That's taking a long time, but it's waking up TFS. It's the first time we've ever run a build. And then it'll queue up and it'll run the second build for us. There we go. That first one succeeded. It's already started on the second one. Fantastic. So that's how easy it is to do builds. You just point it at your solution file and go. Question, sir? The question was, can you use custom MS build scripts? Yes, you can use custom MS build scripts. You can, if you have, you see here in the process template, if you have just got a, so there's two ways you can customize a build. You can, there's a Windows workflow behind this, and in fact, there's a hands-on lab down in the hands-on lab area all about build customization you can have a play with. You can change the workflow to edit the build, but you can also just point it at some random MS build script, and you would do that here, and it would just work, and you can point it at, have custom MS build tasks as well. It just all works. And if I go back into my build explorer, we can see those two builds have succeeded. Super. Okay. So we've got source control. We have build automation running all in a session. That's pretty cool. I better just check my slides. I think the next thing is, yeah, okay. Planning work. Great. So back to where we were. We have, as well as source control and builds in Team Foundation Server, we also store work item tracking. So from Visual Studio, Eclipse, or again the web, I can just come in here, go to work, and notice this is for people who've seen TFS 2010, this is a completely redesigned work item tracking system. It's shiny and asynchronous and lots of cool features. So I can right click here, I can create a new product backlog item of, let's say, demo TFS. Okay, hit save. So that's that created. And then maybe as part of demo TFS, wake up. Notice he's actually doing that in the background asynchronously, so I could do some other stuff, but I'm going to let that work. I can maybe come in here. I can add a new child task to it. So I can add a task of show version control. Okay. There we go, show version control. I'm going to hit save and close. I'm going to create another one called show build. Now I'm using keyboard shortcuts. Show build. Okay. La la la. Save and close. And then maybe show work item tracking. Okay. So I've created a bunch of tasks associated to my original story, my product backlog item. If I go back now to my queries, I can have a look at the product backlog. I can see there's the one product backlog item. If I look, I can then, if I look in the current sprint and see sprint backlog, we can see there is demo TFS and there's the child work items. And these are just queries. I can anywhere in here right click and do a new query. So I can say a new query, and I can do this from Visual Studio, from Eclipse, or from the web, and I can say, give me all work items, or give me all work items that were created by, or changed by, how about that, me, how about that, there you go, oops. So give me all work items that basically I've ever touched. That's a good one. I've never tried that one before, so let's find it. So my work items. Okay. Save that in my queries. There we go, my work items, hit results. If I look at my work items, there we go, that shows you all the work items that I've touched, which happens to be all of them. Great. Now these queries are quite useful. So what happens if I want to keep them as a favorite so I can remember where they are? I can actually come in here, we can favorite the current sprint backlog. We could add it to the team favorites. And we could also maybe add to my personal favorites this My Work Items one. So now I've got some favorites. And those favorites are stored on the server, but they're actually available to you everywhere. So if I go to Work Items inside Visual Studio, we can see there's the team favorites and my personal favorites there. That's interesting. Okay. Let's just hit refresh quickly. There we go. That worked better. All right, there we go. So that's showing you in Visual Studio. And then that's showing them there on the server. If I now go to my team's homepage, because I added the query sprint backlog to my team's favorites, it brings up a tile here, you know, new shiny Microsoft. We've got a nice tile, a tiled interface that shows us the sprint. We also can, if we want to, go to builds. We'll add that to the team favorites. There we go, and go back to the home page, and we now see we've got Hello World and the Sprint Backlog. In the RTM version, you can actually drag drop. Oh no, you can do it here, can you? No. In the RTM version, you can drag drop these tiles around. Let's see if it's on this build I got here. No, it isn't. It's in the RTM version. You'll be able to drag and drop these tiles to organize them, whatever. So it gives me a quick overview of my build status, shows me work. And then you can also, as well as using the web, Visual Studio, and Eclipse or whatever to edit work items. You can also fire up Excel or Microsoft Project and use those also to edit your work items. So I could just come in here. In fact, a quicker way is for me to, let's just, to save some time, let's right-click on current sprint, right-click on there, and we'll say open in Excel. It's just going to quickly create a query for me and save it and set it all up. So that's great. Here we go. I've got my product backlog items and things. And maybe I'm in a meeting room and I want to add some more stuff. So demo TFS, fill out evals. There we go. As a PBI. Product backlog item. And that has got some child tasks of find a machine with working internet, which is hard. There we go. Task and then fill out eval. Task and then, you know, leave amusing comment because my boss reads the scores, but I read all the comments. So there we are. There we are. Task. There we go. Fantastic. I can then hit publish, and now that goes and stores that in TFS. So I could have done that all offline, and I come back online and hit publish. And so finally, when you come into your server. You do a, now we've got builds, we've got source control, we've got work item tracking. The final thing I wanted to show you, and this is the most powerful thing about Team Foundation Server, adopt the part of TFS that you have most pain with, which is usually source control or work item tracking. Then adopt the other part, which source control work item tracking. Once you've got source control, look at build automation. Once you have those three, you have complete end-to-end traceability of source code changing, you know, requirements to changes in source code to the build that that requirement was fixed in. So I can come in here and I can say, demo done. Hit that there. And I can associate that change, if I go to my pending changes window here, where am I? Yep. I can associate that change with my work items. I can say show build. In fact, I could associate. Oh, can I do multiple? Associate with all of these. There we go. Ta-da! I'm going to associate this checking with all those work items. And the reason why, to show off TFS 2012. Hit check in. Yes, I'd like to save everything. Advantage of IDE integration. And that's going to do the changes. It's going to link the work items, and it's also going to move the work items on to a resolved state. And then if I go to my builds, we'll actually see the build running. And when the build finishes, it'll run and it'll tell us not only what changes were included in that build, but why the changes were included in that build. What work items were they associated with? So that's end-to-end, the whole point of TFS, really. I did want to show you one other thing. So while that's building, sometimes paper is a really, really good tool for planning, for moving work around on the dashboards, you know, rather than just having them in Excel spreadsheets. Sometimes it is. This picture is actually taken in building 41 of a planning thing we were doing, the team, Visual Studio Ultimate team were doing. So sometimes paper is a really good tool. However, it doesn't scale. Occasionally the cleaner will come along and find bits of paper on the floor, and he'll just pick them up and stick them back on the board, you know, randomly. So it doesn't always scale. It doesn't scale great for me because I live in Ireland and my team are in Redmond and North Carolina. Seeing what's on the whiteboard isn't great. So we have, in the full version of TFS, we also have a full agile planning system with work items where you can drag and drop and move them around and things. I was going to show you this on the internet, on TFS preview, but I didn't want to rely on that, so I'm just going to quickly show you this now. And you can just drag and drop them around. We'll maybe have a quick look at it. And you can do some sprint planning. Now, that's in the full version of Team Foundation Server. You also get some shiny extra graphs. Let's just quickly see if I do have internet. What I can do is show you that this build worked. And it's coming here. And look, it's associated my change. It said my build's associated with change set 14, and these are the work items it was associated with. So that's good. Great. Let's just quickly see if the internet's up. This is my personal backlog over here. If I go to view board, we'll see. No, the internet's not up. It's not going to work. Okay, never mind. I was hopefully going to show you that, but I'm not. You basically just drag, drop, move things around, just like we were doing earlier on with work items. When we get working internet, you come down to the booth and I can show you that. That's what I was going to show you. Great. So hopefully, TFS, easy to use. If anyone wants any more help using TFS, please come down to the booth area. I can show you more. One thing before you go, I wanted to highlight. I've talked about three different versions of TFS now. Express, which is the one everybody gets for free. Server, which 90% of the room own anyway, because you've already got MSDN subscriptions. And then Service, which is TFS preview running in the cloud, which everybody can get access to for free at the moment. We're not charging for it at the moment, but we will do eventually. The things that you can do, SharePoint integration and data warehousing is only available in the server. Installation and setup, if you have lots of prerequisites, is a little harder with server, a bit easier in Express. There is no setup in the cloud because we've already done that for you. However, if you want the data in your network, then you're going to need either Express or server. Whereas if you're happy for the data to live outside the firewall, then you can host it on the cloud. It means you can collaborate with anyone because it's in the cloud, whereas these people need to be in your network. So there are the three different versions. That's roughly the difference between them. So it's TFS, easy to use, easy to install, and it's much, much more than just the version control tool. Okay. Thanks for your time. I'll be here. Now, and I'm going to head down to the booth area, the purple booth area, which is where you can find me. Alternatively, just email me with any questions or get me on Twitter. And then here's some more sessions that will be useful for you this week, particularly Now you all know how to install TFS, you'll get home and you'll figure and find out you're going to be like the TFS admin because you were the last person that touched it. On Thursday, there's a session Dev345 on the accidental admin that talks about everything I wish somebody had told me before I became a TFS admin, which is great. Anthony Morton does that one, really good session. If you want to go deeper onto the agile planning tools that I just quickly showed you there, Dev21 session, Ewald Hoffman, who's originally from the Netherlands, now on the Team Foundation Server team. He's going to talk about that. And then, yeah, that's some good sessions for you. The rest are all up here. Please do check out the hands-on labs. You can also download a virtual machine and use them there. Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you.